Why do so many marriages end quietly instead of explosively? Today, relationship expert and author Colette Jane Fair explains why midlife women are quiet quitting their marriages and how speaking up can lead to clarity, connection, or the courage to choose yourself.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week, we had Colette Jane Fair on the show. We had a powerful conversation about why so many midlife women quietly disengage from their marriages and how breaking the silence can change everything. Today, I'm joined by Colette Jane Fair, a licensed couples therapist, relationship expert, and author of the book, The Cost of Quiet. Colette works with midlife women who look fine on the outside, but feel profoundly alone inside their marriages. Her work gives language to the emotional disconnection, silence, and self-abandonment that so often lead women to our office, long before they ever imagined divorce would be part of their story. Today, Colette and I will be discussing why many long-term marriages don't end because of infidelity or finances, but because of years of emotional disconnection, what quiet quitting looks like inside a marriage, and why it's so common among midlife women, and why midlife women become the emotional breaking point for so many women, and how speaking up can repair a relationship or help a woman reclaim herself. Welcome, Colette.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I am really looking forward to this. For our listeners, we were talking right beforehand, but of course we'll get into all of it before we start, but Colette's got an amazing podcast that I think all of our listeners of this show should be listening to, myself included. It's like, did you make this one for me? Like, I don't even know. I hate to say midlife, but like, let's be real.
I know.
That's where
I know. And I think of midlife now as like 40 to 80, you know? I
love
mean, even
it.
35
yes.
to 80, right? It's
there
like
we
a
go.
Whole
there
term.
We go.
For when women are coming into our own. I
yes.
think in a way it's our best season, whatever age you identify with. You know, middle age technically is probably like 35 now, right? If you look at the average
yeah.
lifespan. But I think we're really embracing that at an older point. So my therapist co-host and I started a podcast called Insights from the Couch, specifically for women at midlife, whatever age that may be, to kind of talk about all the changes and, you know, the sandwich generation where we're caring often for our parents and older relatives, but still raising kids, managing busy careers, anxiety, all the different stuff, including relationships that we face at this juncture.
Yes. Well, listeners, they're nailing it on the head because I'm like, oh yeah, that I got that. I got that. Like all these things affect me. Anyway, that was like a side thing, but I really love it. So Colette, for our listeners, would you share a little about your background and then kind of what led you to focus your work on emotional disconnection and attachment patterns in relationships?
Yes, thank you. So I was kind of that classic case years ago who met a boyfriend in college, dated him all the way through, got married, had the big fancy black tie country club wedding, the whole thing, and ended up divorced at 31 years old, which even though the marriage technically only lasted 7 years, I had been with that man for all the formative years of my life, going on 14 years from 18 to 31. And I really thought that marriage was everything it needed to be successful because we never argued. We were so happy from the outside looking in. It really looked idyllic. But in retrospect, and of course, I was not a therapist until later, but in retrospect, I had gone through as a kid witnessing my own parents argue before they got divorced. And in large part, I thought, I never want to replicate that. So I'm going to have this very conflict-free, you know, perfect marriage. I'm going to be agreeable. I'm going to be the perfect wife. I'm never going to be like my parents who were yelling and screaming half the time. And I think as a result, I really lost my voice along the way because I typically wouldn't get a good response when I try to share. This is what led me to become a therapist, to help people with what I hear over and over again in my therapy office is very similar to what I experienced in my first marriage. And also why I wrote the book, because I can only see so many people in therapy. And I think this is really important.
Well, you, and it is. And I think really anybody can resonate with it. And it just depends on what level. But, you know, I think it's a great book. And about, I think about the people pleasing and staying quiet to avoid conflict is, it really does happen to most of us, yep. Particularly as women. And so let's get right in, because you've spent years helping couples have hard conversations. Yet, like, how did the pieces come into play, right? Because you talked about, okay, like your marriage, you know, dissolved, and then you went to therapy. So when did it all click for you? Like, that is what was happening.
Yeah. While I was married, I remember feeling the desire to express myself, and I would try, but a lot of times it was maybe tentative or a little indirect, or I'd think, well, he should know I've said it before, or isn't it obvious? You know, I talk about in my book, these top 10 myths we have as women about our needs and how they should be more obvious, that are really protecting ourselves from vulnerability. So mm-hmm. I bought into a lot of the things that were just kind of unconscious I hear from women all the time in my therapy office. And it was after I got divorced. And by the way, I was the divorce seeker. But I had gotten to a point where I was so resentful and disgusted and fed up and disconnected that I felt like I kind of hated my partner at the time. And I really didn't see the role I played. I genuinely didn't.
Yeah.
So it was after that when I went to my own therapy, and then a couple of years after the divorce, I thought, you know, this is so important. I want to go back to graduate school. I want this to be my career. I want to help other people learn to do this and not have to go through a messy, painful divorce in order to realize that you may be self-silencing, suppressing your emotions, and telling yourself it's because of your partner's response that you can't speak up, when the reality is we always have that power. I liken it to Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz having those ruby slippers on her feet. Mm-hmm. She's running around thinking she's got to find somebody else in order to be able to go home, when really she had the power all the time. We always have agency to self-advocate. The key is we have to work through our fear of conflict, which is natural. And we have to really get clear and emotionally regulated before we go to a partner and realize we don't have to manage their response, that we have to be true to ourselves.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that it's just so fascinating, because in reading the book, like, there's just so many really important things, which we'll get into as we go through. But to start, from your perspective, what does quiet quitting look like in a marriage? And why is it especially common in women?
Yeah.
In midlife.
So I think it hits a breaking point often in midlife, somewhat biologically, our hormones shift, right? Estrogen goes down even in perimenopause, which can start for some women as early as their mid to late 30s. And we also have had some life experiences. We develop confidence. We're not necessarily willing to put up with as much, or we're starting to feel the exhaustion and the burnout and the resentment, which is a big clue that you've been putting up with too much for too long. What we don't want is the pendulum to swing the other way and everything comes out with like anger or what we call destructive conflict. But what often happens is in the middle, and that is this quiet quitting, which we now have terminology for thanks to the origin of COVID. The term first came up really to refer to quiet quitting your job and Gen Zers. And now we realize this is something, we're naming it quiet quitting, but that's been around in marriages for a long time, which is, if I go to you with like a kind of indirect signal, or I'm upset, I rely on being upset, and so I say something and it comes out sideways, or maybe I'm more critical than I realize, and I don't get a good response, then I start to feel like, well, what's the point? It never goes anywhere. We just get stuck in these dead-end loops, right? I call it toxic ping pong, where couples go around again and again and again, and they're not really talking about what's underneath that argument about the dishes, which is your fears, your insecurities, your longings, your need for comfort and reassurance. So if I don't know how to do that, and I'm giving you a mixed signal or an indirect signal, and I get something that doesn't feel good back to you from you, like defensiveness or dismissiveness, then I start to just say, what's the point? And I stop turning toward the relationship and bringing up things that bother me. Emotional intimacy in a relationship really is talking about your underlying feelings and fears. It's expressing grievances, but clearly and kindly, which is the part that often gets lost. And so I think when we don't feel like we get through, we just start to give up. And we slowly start to remove ourselves emotionally from the relationship. And at the surface, this can look like being easygoing. And sometimes, you know, in heterosexual relationships, particularly, husbands will say, gosh, everything seems great. We're not arguing anymore. She's not complaining. But this is the danger zone, right? When women are really saying, forget it, there's no point. Maybe I'm not going to actually leave and get a divorce. Maybe I am, but I'm done investing myself and trying to get my needs for connection met here. And then we tend to outsource it to our friends, our children, our hobbies. But resentment often builds. And in some cases, Heather, there are reasons to quiet quit a relationship. Let's say a woman cannot leave. There are a lot of financial, and you know this very well, there are so many different situations where maybe quiet quitting is an act of self-preservation. But what I want to bring attention to is that we're often quiet quitting unconsciously. We don't even really realize that we've stopped turning toward the relationship, and we don't realize that we have a role to play in being heard with how we show up and express ourselves. And this is why I wrote the book, to give a roadmap for how to say things so that you can address it and really get great information about whether your relationship can or cannot meet your needs. And then you can make empowered choices. But what happens a lot of the time is people get into my office before they get into divorce, right? Yeah. And they say, God, we have been operating like this for so many years. We are so disconnected. There's so much resentment that it may be too late to turn it around. And in some cases, it's fixable and some relationships are meant to end. But I want people to have more agency and more intentionality in driving the bus of those choices.
Well, and I think that's true, right? Because many times by the time they get to my office, which is a big step, And oftentimes I'm not really sure. And I'm like, but you are. Like, you know you are. And it's okay. I'm not here to promote that at all. But like, you're just not maybe in acceptance of it. But you are here, which is a massive step in a scary direction to come talk to a divorce attorney. And I'm going to ask another question. But gosh, because I don't want to let go of the resentment. Well, you know what? I'm just going to skip to that because that's huge. I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, and I know in your book you talked about it, like it's just more than just even what you think that you're angry at him. There's so much more to it.
Yes. And resentment is the biggest clue in the body that you have let something go, that you have failed to hold a boundary, that you have allowed behavior around you or by you to occur that isn't really okay with you. It's misdirected anger at another person, but that's really about the self. And we have what I call good girl-itis still. Yeah. And this is the thing I'm seeing in my office. I have all these women who are really smart. They're emotionally intelligent. They're very powerful and capable in the home and the workplace, you know, whichever, both. But when it comes to the relationship, they start to self-silence or they self-edit or they hold back and they tell themselves, oh, it's because of the response I get. But the reality is it's a choice because it feels a little bit uncomfortable when our personal relationships matter so much. So you might be able to go into the courtroom and be perfectly assertive, but then you come home and if your partner gets frustrated with you, you're like, you know what? This isn't worth it. I don't want to get into a whole thing. And when we do that over and over again about little things like who picked up the dry cleaning or the way you respond to me or don't respond to me, they start to stack up and they harden into resentment, especially over the years. So I'm giving a method of saying, look, you've got to develop a habit of exercising your voice over the little things. It's not the big issues. It's not crisis points. It's the little daily things where we swallow and we tend to say it's not worth it. What I'm telling you is that's where it all starts. And you have got to build a muscle. It's like an emotional muscle for saying, you know, when you, let's just use the dishes because it's so easy. When you said you would do the dishes and then they sat there for 3 days, right? As neutrally as possible, you're just stating the problem. Here's how I felt. What we tend to do is do a lot of criticism or project what I call the negative partner story. You don't care. You don't listen to what I say. You don't ever follow through. But when we shift into, you know, I felt hurt and disappointed. And the story I tell myself is that you're not listening to me or what I need doesn't matter. And I'm telling you this because I want our relationship to be really close. I want to repair with you. You know, like that starts to open, that vulnerability and assertiveness starts to open a different dialogue. And then we don't end up filled with resentment, which is poison. Like they say, it's poison. Yes.
Okay, so that happens. We're going to just stay on the dishes one.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we all... Most everybody got dishes at some point.
Exactly.
But it's like, and I'm just going to project and say this, but you don't know when, right? So you're like, oh, okay. Because I think this is about like goes into how we're conditioned as women. So, okay, you're like, okay, well, we're really busy right now. We're trying to get out of the house, you know, and the kids and whatnot. Even though he said he was going to do it before he left this morning. He didn't. Whatever. We got to go. It's not the right time to bring it up because there's a lot going on. And then we get home at the end of the day and, you know, you're doing all the things. And then our self-talk or maybe our, you know, that conditioning of, you know, staying quiet. We're like, oh, well, now it's going to look like I'm holding a grudge and I'm keeping scorecard because I'm bringing it up. But like this happened this morning or even 3 days ago. And yet now I feel like I'm a nag or somebody who's keeping score to bring it up. So is that like normal, like self-talk and the minimizing
oh my
of
gosh.
Harmonies?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And I'm so glad you brought that up because I think that's exactly what our minds do. We have parts of self that try to protect us from being vulnerable because being vulnerable is so powerful. It's the key to emotional intimacy, but it feels a little scary, especially if you're not used to it. And it feels scary even when you are used to it because you're actually putting yourself out there. So our minds will come up with all kinds of reasons that we shouldn't say it, that it's not a good time, how we're going to look. And this is where it's really a paradigm change that begins with connecting to yourself. And my whole method of communication is self-connected communication, which is that you start inside of you. You know your needs matter. You tune in and you get really clear about what you're feeling and why. And you understand when it comes to attachment science. Forget the annoyance of the dishes itself. The deeper thing is probably that you've shared something, you've put it out there, a request for help, and it wasn't done. And this makes us feel like we don't matter, we're not important, we're not a priority. So when we can address that level, but know that our mind's going to do all that noise that tells us we shouldn't say it or it's not a good time. And in fairness, of course, you don't want to pick the worst time possible. You know, your partner just got off like a terrible work call. But I would say within 24...
But sometimes that's when you just are going to explode and you got to get it out, right?
Yes, but what I want you to do first is pause long enough to regulate and process. This is the first step. Okay. So rather than communicating off the cuff when it's probably going to come out with a lot of volume in our voice, rolled eyes, irritation, something that sends a signal of danger. Like we are relational animals. So if our voice goes up, if our face tightens, we can read each other's body language, especially with a romantic partner in 1/600th of a second. So you really have to go from a standpoint of I have a right to say how I feel and what I need. And I've got to be mindful that it's very hard to hear feedback from someone else. So let me not be sending cues of danger and threat to my partner. So you don't want to just fire off, but you also don't want to go, oh, it's a bad time, forget it. And then here we are 3 weeks later. You can't even remember what made you mad, but you're short with your partner, you're edgy. Uh-huh. We want to go and say, hey, listen, I'm tempted to sweep this under the rug because I fear that you're going to see me as a nag or this is going to be one more thing. But I want to just be truthful with you that my feelings were hurt, that I was a little disappointed to see that the dishes weren't done after I had asked. I get this story in my head that I'm not important to you, that my needs don't matter. I'm not saying that's true. That's my story. And I feel sad about it. So I'm coming to you to tell you how I feel. Could you just reassure me that I do matter, that you are listening? And also, could you let me know when you're going to do the dishes or that next time you'll make sure if you say yes, that you follow through? We're giving a very clear message. And of course, this doesn't guarantee your partner does their part, but it gives you the best chance possible of being heard and responded to.
Yeah. And that is so smart. And then I want to talk about this because all this resonates with me so well as I read the book and the behaviors, right? So I know you clearly, you know, you've been through this a lot, but Lynn, you talked about how bickering is not what we think it is, which is what we think is like, we're telling you, like, you know, we are expressing, we're like, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, whatever, but like, it's not effective communication.
No, right? Bickering, I define it in the book as a form of avoidance. Because you're so right, Heather. We think, well, I said it. I told you, why didn't you do the dishes, right? But if the conversation is just, oh, I can't believe you didn't do the dishes. And I'm using my own way of reacting, right? If I don't process first, I'll be like, what the hell? Like, I thought you were going to do the dishes. This is why I never ask you anything, right? That is not really communicating your feelings. That is setting up your partner to respond back with more bickering, right? They're going to be defensive. They're going to tune you out. They're going to go, why are you coming at me? I didn't do the dishes because I had an emergency this morning. You never even ask or give me the benefit of the doubt. All you do is attack me. Yeah, I don't attack you. This is why I don't keep, right? Then we're off to the races. Or one or both just say, forget it. This goes nowhere. So instead of bickering, go a little deeper and really identify what you're feeling underneath the surface frustration. Are you hurt? Are you sad? Are you scared? Because most of the time, what we really need is comfort and reassurance that we are important in our partner's eyes, that we're worthy of being heard. And we usually skip talking about that part. And when we're vulnerable and clear about those things, when you're really vulnerable because we have mirror neurons, it invites vulnerability. It's very hard if you say, you know, I don't want to criticize you. You probably had your reasons, but I was really hurt when I asked. It's so hard for me to ask for help. When I asked for help and then it wasn't done when you said you would, it really hurt my feelings. It disappointed me. It made me feel like I should just never say anything again. Can we talk about it? When you come that way and your tone is calm and you're really regulated, it's much harder for your partner to be like, what's wrong with you? You're attacking me. I'm not saying it won't happen because everybody's got their own wounds, but it's much less likely.
Well, okay. So here's one.
Yeah.
And it's really, I just read this book. So this is like totally off topic, but not called The Husband. I don't know if you've heard of it. Like, you got to read it. I wasn't sure at first, but basically they're in a community and this therapist is hypnotizing the men to be like these super duper husbands. It was kind of funny. And then reading the acknowledgments at the end, she's like, you know, I was like, why is it that, you know, we as women know what to do? We never had a baby before, but like, you know, her example is like, we know how to pack the diaper bag. Like, we know what we're going to need, like, or to do these things. And we begin to feel resentment that we have to ask because you want to be in a partnership, right? And you've got a few kids and those teachers send a lot of emails and papers home. And like, there's just a lot. And it gets overwhelming. And I think many women feel, because this is like leading up to this, like the midlife, you know, when you get to a point where you're somewhat exhausted and may, and this is probably part of it, right? We don't think we should have to ask. Maybe we don't know how to communicate what is needed in a way that gets heard. And so we quit and we're like, fine, we're just going to do it all. But now I'm pissed and I'm tired and I hate you. And I would rather not have you here because it feels like another child.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt in my first marriage. Listen, it is not fair. There is a reality that women are carrying more than 70% of the mental load, the worrying, the anticipating. The kids all have a dental appointment and I have to be at work and, you know, we have to get food for this dinner on Friday. Like all that stuff men historically haven't carried, and it isn't right and it shouldn't be. And I believe a lot of it has just been so societally conditioned for the years that men, they don't know, most of them. They're not thinking about these things. And yet at the same time, when we look at it psychologically from an emotional maturity standpoint, it is each person's responsibility to communicate for themselves what they feel and what they need. And in a healthy, deeply connected relationship where there's intimacy, and intimacy is not just physical, it's physical and emotional, but the emotional is so important. And especially for women, women don't really feel wanting, desirous of physical intimacy. They don't have the emotional connection for the most part. We do have to say, hey, maybe it's a conversation about the mental load. You know, I notice in our relationship, I'm just making this up, we're both working, and yet I'm the one who is like carrying the mental weight of all of these other things that you don't seem to be aware of. This creates a lot of resentment for me, and I don't want that to come between us. Can we talk about this? You know, can you start to try to think about some of this? Because I don't want to have to also have the burden of educating you on everything every day on top of it. Now, that said, I would say you're in your life. You do want to ask for what you need, because most of the time that I don't want to have to ask, yes, it's annoying that men don't think of these things, but most of the time, it's also a protection against vulnerability. And we have a hard time as women. Okay. There's a lot of hyper independence, right? We think like we should be sort of needless and selfless and not really have to ask for help. Our partner should just know. That's all protection from vulnerability. So what I'm saying to you is put it out there, put it out clearly, but kindly. And name what's happening. I'm the one who's carrying most of the mental load here. Okay. Maybe you don't realize, but something has to shift, or it's going to create resentment and disconnection in our relationship. And the truth is, we don't want to say things sometimes because we think it will be, I hear this in my office every day. Well, if I say it and then it doesn't happen, then it'll be even more painful than if I didn't say it at all. But you know, the truth is, really, it's more powerful. It's empowering. It feels good in your body to speak your truth. And if you don't say it, it's still happening. So name it, feel the relief that comes from that. And then if you have a partner that you're doing your part and you're really being clear and kind and following this blueprint I give you in the book, which is like an emotional Mad Libs, and your partner just doesn't help, doesn't listen, then maybe you do end up seeking a divorce. Maybe this relationship isn't going to meet your needs. And that's a very personal choice.
Exactly. And I think, though, like all of those things you touched on, because, and we don't all know, right? Because like you were talking about what was modeled for you, you were just like going, doing the complete opposite.
Exactly.
And which you think, which we would all think, well, hey, I don't want that. So I'm going to do this.
Yep.
And I think we are all doing the best that we can, but it is so, it is like, it was enlightening to me, and it still is, right? Because here I run a business, I have employees. I think I am a great communicator. And you know what? I wasn't. I would say something like, it's clear as mud, you know, and even with clients, because sometimes, and I'm sure you see that, and even in relationships, like if you're overwhelmed, you only can take in so much.
Yes.
So I think when we can realize that, like, hey, we want to be heard and received in any kind of relationship, whether it's work and of course it's personal, but like, are we speaking in a way that they're going to receive it? Just like you said, if like that whole, you know, hair goes up on the back of their neck, they read your thing and they're in like fight or flight.
Exactly.
They're not going to receive any of it.
Exactly.
And also in the way that you do it and knowing, I think realizing when like, hey, I can't do this part, right? But we as women are like, oh, we got to do everything all the time for our kids and our families. And I think that's unrealistic. And there are times when you're like, you've got to take over this part of all the 1,000 things that have to be done. And if we can communicate that, and like you said, and your partner's like, well, absolutely, right? You know, or I say, maybe could we pick something out? Like, whatever it is, you got to start there.
Yes. And I think a big thing that I hear from women all the time that I know I used to feel too is like, well, then it won't be done right. Or, yeah. Right, you got to let go of
we
all
gotta
of
let that.
That
go.
Let people do it their own messy way and really realize that it might be uncomfortable for you. If you're someone who's always stayed on top of things or you played the role growing up of like being the one in the family that always kind of managed everybody else, these things have to be worked through. There'll be a little bit of discomfort, but it's so freeing. And really, it feels so good and it lowers our risk for anxiety, depression, cardiovascular disease, IBS, autoimmune disorders. I mean, the list goes on. To not suppress and also to not have it come out sideways, passive aggressively, indirectly, blame, criticism. None of those things work. To really connect to yourself.
Really, really, Colette, blaming doesn't work.
No,
blaming
just
being mean doesn't work, does it?
Never. But you know what? This is what happens. I call it victim volcano syndrome. And this is what used to happen to me. You keep it in. You tell yourself it's not worth it. It's not a big deal. You can rise above. Who wants to get in a bickering loop? And then the things stack up. And then finally you've had it. And a bunch of stuff comes out that's stored up. It comes out nasty. You say things like, that's it, I'm done with you. Your partner feels blindsided. And then it becomes about your reaction and none of your legitimate grievances ever get addressed. So I give you, in this book, this book is really about giving you a method for the tools that do work. How to repair, how to take a pause in a couple's timeout, how to not get stuck in bickering loops, how to really identify what you feel and need and regulate yourself before you go to your partner with a clear message. But what I want to stress so much, Heather, because I don't have a stake in whether people stay married or get divorced. I want people to do what's best for them. And sometimes it's staying together and sometimes it's genuinely getting divorced. The biggest cost of quiet is that if you silence yourself or avoid conflict over time, you ruin your relationship with yourself. You ruin your own mental and physical well-being. And whether the relationship works out or not, this is something every woman deserves to do for herself, is to reclaim her voice and to feel more empowered in using it at work, with your family, with your partner, with your friends, everywhere, right? This is the primary task of adult emotional maturity.
Well, and I love this. I want to talk about, because we have to take responsibility. And for our part, ever that may be, and oftentimes that whole, that victim part and all of that comes into play because they're like, say, in my office, right? And it's all their fault. And it's like, well, like it takes two. And I'm not saying, you know, and it's again, the blame game and who's worse. But, you know, I love what you talked about in your book about challenging your partner expectations, because I think that's a big one. That is hard for, I'll just speak for myself. That's hard.
I
should
agree.
Be doing everything. Like I thought that was the idea, right? They meet all my needs. I shouldn't have to talk about them or tell them.
Right. Right. And you know what? That's what I thought. I can still find myself feeling that in my relationship. I think that's how it shows up for us.
Okay.
And I think this is why, you know, in my divorce, I thought genuinely it was all my partner's fault. Like that felt 100% true.
That feels good and true most of the time.
I mean, totally. And there were definitely some things that happened that like weren't okay. It's not to say the other person is blameless, but the agency and the power we have is in being willing to look at ourselves. And even if we only contributed 5%, of what went wrong. Yeah. Let's look at that 5%, take responsibility for it, and grow, because then we show up better in our other relationships. We learn from it and we don't self-abandon. I think this whole they should know is really also conditioned by movies, fairy tales, even still. Right? That like we fall in love, and if it's the right person and they know us and they get us, then they're going to anticipate our needs. But being a therapist, you realize we're all raised so differently. We have such different personalities. We show love so differently. Nobody can possibly figure out what's in your head at that moment unless you tell them. So I like to use the simple analogy just to think of visually as with a partner, we're using the signal like that we have in the car. And a lot of people don't use their signal. It drives me crazy, actually, as a New Yorker. Like that signal is communicating. If someone in front of you is going 10 miles an hour and they don't have their signal on, you're pulling your hair out. But if they have their signal on, you're going to go, oh, they're lost. They're trying to figure out where to turn. This is going to end soon. We have to just say very clearly what's happening inside of us in the moment. And that creates safety. And that's what creates connection. So in the moment, you look all distressed, right? Let's say you come home from work and you're in a terrible mood. The first thing a partner often thinks, men and women even, is like, oh, maybe it's something with me, or like, why are they so short? If you come home and say, hey, I had a horrible day, not upset with you in any way, of course, I'm just so stressed out. I really need to decompress. I think I need 10 minutes to just be grumpy and then I'm going to be normal, right? Like, I don't want to take it out on you. There's immediate safety and knowledge of what's happening. Yeah. You're living intimately with somebody, and all they have, if you're not communicating, is what they see on the outside that can be very, very confusing and hard to understand. Interpret.
Yeah. And I mean, that is so brilliant and true. And again, I know we're all, when we talk about it, that seems like, oh yeah, that's so obvious. But I don't know that it comes naturally, because you're right. We're like, well, they should know that. You didn't even ask me about my day. Clearly, you know, and it's like,
yes, it's obvious I'm upset.
It's obvious. What's wrong with you, but, you know, maybe they're the dog threw up, the kids are screaming, like, you never know.
And it isn't their job. It's your job, if you care about a relationship with anybody, to say, here's what's going on with me. And then you start to also create a space where that person can share those kind of things with you. And to realize that they're not responsible for your mood. You're not responsible for their mood. We're responsible for speaking about what's happening on the inside clearly and kindly and calmly. And then we can be each other's secondary support, right? We might say to our partner, I really need a hug. It's been a terrible day, you know? And then hopefully they give us a hug. And that's a moment of safe connection, of support, of reassurance, instead of, wow, they see that I'm so quiet and distressed and they're not even coming to hug me. They suck.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Like, and on the one hand, if you can just say that, which is vulnerable, but you're also giving them the tool to say, this is just what I need right now. Like, that can be such a different evening, right? Experience.
Yep.
Either one of those.
Exactly. It's like choose your own adventure from when we were young. But what I want to hold out hope for people too, because I see this in my office, people listening might say like, oh, well, you know, that's too scary, or they won't respond well. Everybody thinks their partner won't respond well. But when you're really vulnerable and clear, a lot of the time people respond well. And then when you do this and it feels a little scary to say, hey, I had a terrible day, I really need a hug right now, let's just say, and you get responded to, then it becomes less scary to do next time. You start to have a positive feedback loop of why this makes sense to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, right, it's just,
they're little steps. And it's like, if you can try it. So that's one thing. Like, many women listening are probably like, it's too late to fix our marriage or too late to start over. What would you say to that woman who feels like she's just already lost herself and it's too late?
Yeah. So a lot of times it's not too late, even though it feels like it. When you change the way you show up in a relationship, because it's a cycle, right? It's a co-created interactional pattern, your partner may respond in ways that you would never anticipate. Or I want to honor that sometimes it's too late because somebody really feels done, and then so be it. But if you do this, and really this is something everyone should develop as a process, whether you stay in a relationship or you're single, because we're all in relationships, yeah, then you're going to be really, really clear and sure about what would or wouldn't have been possible. I left my first marriage going, I'm not sure it would have been different, but I'll never know because I wasn't communicating this way. And this is why I wrote the book, is like, let's do our side of the street, clean that up, come to the table like a mature, wise, loving adult who's connected to ourselves. And then you can make decisions with that information about what you get back from your partner.
Well, I love that. And that's great advice. What a great conversation. I can't believe we're like at the end. But before we go, Colette, our show is called Women Winning Divorce, because I do believe, you know, that you can win and win at life. And so I'd love to know, what does winning at life mean to you?
Oh, it's such a great question. This is the best I've ever felt in my life at 52, but I'm the messiest I've ever been in some ways, in terms of, like I said to you at the beginning of this podcast, I forgot all my jewelry today because I ran out the door scattered. I think I'm What it means to be winning is that I'm showing up as my authentic self. I'm not so worried about what other people think. I'm staying true to myself. And sometimes I'm going to be judged for it. I'm going to be judged anyway. So who cares? What feels amazing to me is making sure I honor myself and that I have close connected relationships in my life, whether it's with a romantic partner, a friend, my daughters. That for me is winning at 52 years old.
Awesome. Well, that does sound like winning for sure. So where can our listeners find you and learn more about The Cost of Quiet?
Yeah. So my book, The Cost of Quiet, is available everywhere books are sold. Also on my website, ColetteJaneFair.com. I have a great Substack that's free called Secrets of a Therapist that you can find on Substack. And I send a weekly thing with lots of great tools and information that can help you in relationships and also thriving at midlife. And then you can follow me on Instagram at ColetteJaneFair. And I'm very active and engaged there as well.
Wonderful. Well, we've reached the end of our show today. Such a great conversation. And I thank you so much, Colette Jane Fair, for joining us and for sharing both your professional insight and your personal story. I think that just helps us so much, right? Relate to what it is, right? Your honesty and work, I know, is helping so many women and helping our listeners feel less alone and more empowered to choose truth over silence. So thank you.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up, I want to share something personal. On February 17th, my book, Unbreakable Divorce, will be released on Amazon. I wrote this book for the woman who feels scared, unsure, or quietly asking herself what comes next. After walking along so many women through divorce, I know this season can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to break you. Unbreakable Divorce is a reminder that even here, you are strong, capable, and not alone.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today.